You heard the man. Freedom, that's what it's all about. This is Krista Kafer. You're listening to Backbone Radio. We're here on 710 KNUS and also 1460 AM KZNT in Colorado Springs. And it's been a great night. We've had some great guests. Our next guest, and still trying to get a hold of him, but we've got John Georges of Banjo Billy's Tours. And you say, what? That sounds like an odd thing to have in the program. Well, it's part of my small business segments, and it's a small business that I've really come to love. I've been on his tours. If you live in Denver or Boulder, at some point you've driven past the Shack Bus and ferrying folks around, seeing interesting things about either Denver or Boulder. And it's just an interesting business. I'm going to give him a short segment to talk a little bit about it and also to talk about kind of what it's like to start a small business from scratch. I had a chance to meet him at CU's 50 for Colorado, which is a wonderful program. If you can, you should check it out. At the University of Colorado, they do this this class called 50 for Colorado, where you get, as a student, I mean, it's a single class. It's through your business school or not, but it's for, you know, anybody can take it. You have to apply for it, but you take this class, you get to go around to Colorado's sort of powerhouses of industry. And so they do interview small businesses, but we also look at large industries. And because of 50 for Colorado, I got to go out to Burlington and visit a big farm out there. I got to see a molybdenum mine. Say molybdenum about 50 times fast. It's you get through about two words. It's a little difficult. But I got to see a molybdenum mine go down 2 miles under the earth and got to see the mill. Got to go into NORAD, which was amazing. Got to see wineries on the West Coast or Western Slope. Been nice to go to the West Coast, but Western Slope, and also got to taste some Eastern Colorado wine. So it's to see a lot of different economic sectors around the state. Had some really great lectures at CU, and was just all in all a great program. Got to meet John there. Later took his tour. Thought it was awesome. So producer Don, thank you. We'll be checking in with him, see if we can't pull him up. If not, we'll catch him on another show. I wanted to also do a shout out for Don. Thank you for being an amazing producer and just a general encouragement to me. Love doing the show. It's a lot of fun and love having you as listeners. Our studio line is 303-696-1971. So if you've got a thought, give us a ring. Love to have you on the air. We've talked cookies. We've talked health care. We've talked Medicaid. We've talked higher education. I don't know what subject we left off. A little bit here and there. I did want to mention that I know everyone's talking about Rush Limbaugh. I actually am a Rush fan. Think he's a great guy. I also acknowledge that he's outrageous. A lot of talk show hosts are. If you don't like talk show hosts, you don't like outrage. Sometimes it's best to turn the dial. I'm not gonna say what he said. I think what he said was imprudent and tacky. But if I got upset every time Bill Maher or Rosie O'Donnell or any of those fun folks made fun of Christians, conservatives, Republicans, etc., I would just be mad all the time. And I'd have to probably take, like, I don't know, Ambien and you know, just I'd have problems sleeping at night. I'd have to take some different drugs to help me not be angry. Let's put it that way. And sometimes it's best just to turn the dial. I make it a point not to listen to things that offend me. It's one of the reasons that I listen to only certain radio. I like NPR. I like Rush. I like Hugh Hewitt. I like basically anything that runs on 710. If somebody offends me, I just turn the dial. I think as a country, we become there's a sense of false outrage. Every time somebody says something outrageous that we don't like, we make a big deal out of it. When in fact, maybe it's better just to say, hey, I don't agree. Not going to listen to it. There's a reason I don't watch Bill Maher. I think what's one of the beauties of being the age that I am is that I finally decided that I don't need to waste my time with folks that are a waste of time. And so I don't read things that are offensive, and I don't listen to things that are offensive, and I use the freedom of the dial. And you know what? If sponsors want to boycott, that's fine. That's their choice, too. All I know is that I'll continue to listen to Rush. I take his apology as sincere, and as a itty-bitty talk show host to the great man, I'd say, you know, you apologize, but I'll continue to still listen to you. Well, moving back to the some of the stuff that we've experienced over the last week, I know I went over the all-important mustache bill, which was, you know, kind of a hot topic. We also talked about the primaries. Romney's racked up a couple more wins, and I think that air of inevitability is, maybe our instincts were right all along. It's like he just is going to be the candidate. I happen to like him. He's not perfect, but who of us are? If a candidate is seen to be perfect, I think we have a risk of doing what the other side is, and that is making our candidate into some kind of messiah. Frankly, there was one messiah. He's going to come back, but it's just one guy. Nobody else gets to have that title, and I think it's sad when people are kind of looking for the perfect leader. He's a president, or a presidential candidate, or a governor, or a governor candidate. I mean, these are leaders. They're politicians. They're good people a lot of the time, but they've got flaws. They've got things that we don't agree with. They've got baggage. They've got things that things they've supported in the past, perhaps for political expediency, or perhaps because they hadn't thought something through, perhaps. But I think it's important to look at what we've got before us and decide that, hey, this candidate's a pretty good candidate. And I think Senator Santorum's also a good candidate. But I'm coming around to thinking that perhaps Governor Romney is the way to go, that he's got the discipline to not continually take on a two-front war by saying things that can be misconstrued in the media and then used by the other side to distort the debate. Really, we needed to be talking about the failed economic policies of this current president. We need to talk about the fact that even on social issues, this president is terrible. The man voted for infanticide back when he was in the Illinois Senate, and you really can't get more scary than that. And as long as he's in power, our $16 trillion debt is not going down. Our deficit is not going down. We're going to continually having Americans vilified, continue to have class warfare and used for political purposes. And frankly, I'm tired of it. And I know that regardless of who comes out of the primary, I'm going to be there to back them up. I'm going to be there to support them. And, you know, last couple of elections, I've gotten out there flyers in hand and helped out candidates. And I hope that this time around, you're planning to do the same thing. My puppy was just a little puppy. She's now almost 2 years old during the last election. I just brought her with me. Everybody likes to see a puppy. You could bring your kids. You can do different things to get out there and help a candidate. And if going door to door or calling is not your bag, there's other things that these candidates, they could put you to work. And I found that there's always a little time every week to help out a friend. And there's a lot of good folks, some friends of mine even, that are running this time around. I got my county party, got the state party. There's a lot of folks that could use some manpower. So if I could encourage one thing, and that would be, particularly as this primary winds down, that you think about, hey, where can I put these hands in this mind to work for the good guys, because they're going to need it. Back to our week in review, we did have a couple of deaths this last week that are particularly sad. We've lost Davy Jones, the singer. I used to watch The Monkees. The show aired earlier I watched reruns of The Monkees on Nickelodeon. Let's put it that way. I'm not that old. That was a fun show. It was good. So I, sorry to see that, he has passed away. And then, most sort of, sad for me is Andrew Breitbart, because he's, I'm a little bit younger than him, but just to see somebody die at the age of 43, it really just, breaks my heart, that we lost somebody that young. You know, I see the blinking light. Are we have John on the line? Oh, let's bring him on. Hi, Rusty. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. Well, I heard you talking and saying that Banjo Billy has not shown up, so I'm a friend of Ross Kaminsky's, and I have a small business that perhaps your listeners might find.
Oh, welcome to the show. Tell us about your small business.
Well, it's called Eurasian Interiors Decor Asian, and we direct import and retail furniture and art and antiques from Asia.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Are you in Denver?
Yeah, we're on South Broadway, 1787 South Broadway near Colorado Avenue, right in the middle of all the construction that they're doing.
Near Baker Auction.
Yeah, right next door. Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen your shop. It looks really, it's like full of beautiful things in there.
Oh, cool. Well, come in sometime. But yeah, you know, the construction down there is just devastating, not only to us, but to all the small businesses.
Oh, I bet
there.
It
and
is.
It's like, it'll be better when it's over, but boy, I sure wish, there was something they could have done to
you know what, this
more
segment,
efficiently or more quickly.
Unfortunately, this segment is coming to an end in about 10 seconds. Wish I could have, I'll have you on next time.
Well,
talk a little bit more about your business, because we are literally about to hit the wall. It was great to talk to you. I'll talk to you off air.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Backbone Radio. We are taking care of business, moving right along. We've got next up Senator Gail Schwartz. Welcome to the show.
Krista, welcome. Thank you.
I'll give you a little bit of promotion here. She's Gail Schwartz. Senator Gail Schwartz is from the Mountain District, one of my favorite towns. Buena Vista's in there in your district. And previous to being in the Colorado State Senate, you've also been on the Colorado Board of Regents and also the Colorado Commission of Higher Education.
That's correct. Yeah.
And I heard of you the first time when I checked out your cake bill. I probably shouldn't call it the cake bill because yours is like cake plus.
Well, it isn't cake. It is actually, I call it local foods and local jobs. It's a cottage food law for the state of Colorado.
The cottage food law. Well, if you saw my Denver Post op-ed, you know I'm a big fan. Checked out your bill and also that of Representative Laura Bradford and thought this is something that really needs to become law. Something that should have probably become law long ago because it seems so common sense. Tell us a little bit about how you came to run this bill.
Well, I'm so blessed to be able to represent 11 rural counties in western and southern Colorado, and I held several meetings with farmers throughout my district, one in Salida, one in Delta County, another one in Alamosa in the San Luis Valley, and had hundreds of farmers come and producers and people interested in local foods. And I was trying to discuss with them what were some of the obstacles for them. And this was one of the top issues, the fact that you have producers that are selling in our farmers market and having CSAs, community supported agriculture, and they wanted to be able to provide some what we call value-added foods. Those are foods that are canned or baked or dehydrated or prepared from the food that they raise. And this is why I started last year with a local foods bill, and unfortunately it wasn't successful, but continued to work through the summer with some of the folks that were interested in it, and we ironed out our differences, and this year we'll have it up on thirds in the House, hopefully tomorrow.
Well, congratulations. That's
Thank
awesome.
You.
I was glad I was able to lend a little bit of support in that direction.
Thank you.
One of the things that I like most about your bill is that in addition to baked goods, it's also things like spices, teas, dehydrated foods, seeds, nuts, honey, and even eggs, as these are non-potentially hazardous foods, but it's kind of the full gamut of things that people could buy from their neighbors and feel like they were doing a good thing and not doing an unsafe thing, as it were.
Yeah, I just want to make one thing really clear, Krista. I think what gives the public, I think, some degree of comfort is the label.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it says this is prepared in a kitchen not inspected by the state of Colorado. Here are the ingredients, here are the allergies, and here's my contact information if there's any problems. So from that standpoint, I think we'll see a lot of those products already out in the farmer's market, but now they'll have a label, and I think the public will gain some comfort from that.
Well, and it's important because then it's a choice. I can say, oh, I know that person. I've eaten at their table. I know that it's clean. I see it's been inspected by the county, but I have a personal relationship, and I feel very comfortable buying this from this person.
That's absolutely right. I think that if you've gone to the farmer's market and you've had you have a rapport, and maybe you haven't bought at their farm stand or off their farm, but you've bought at the farmer's market and have confidence in that individual and know most likely what they're promoting is something that you're going to be pretty enthusiastic about.
And if a person's not comfortable, they see the label, they know that they can continue to buy from a commercial entity. They don't have to buy from this cottage industry. They can just move on to another table at the farmer's market.
That's absolutely right. And some folks are producing foods in commercial kitchens, and they're getting retail food establishment licenses. And that's great. But what we're trying to do here is really create entry-level opportunities that we can incubate new products at not a great cost to the individual that's producing them. And boy, if they bring forward the most incredible jam or chutney, and it flies off the table at the farmer's market, hopefully they can start selling it by the pallet and build that commercial kitchen and actually expand that business. This is really an incubator for jobs and folks to be able to provide, you know, a small amount of food, but give them year-round income, stabilize their income so they can sell products year-round, not just during the harvest.
Well, isn't it also, I think, confirm a phenomenon of people doing things from home? I mean, I think about everything from, this idea that people go to one job for 40 years and then retire is not really true anymore. People are doing a lot of different things. They're getting degrees. They're making things. People are sometimes having two or three small businesses, things that they can effectively do from their home, be it legal advice, be it teaching small groups, be it making canned goods. I mean, it recognizes a feature in modern life, and that is that not everybody wants to just go work for someone. A lot of people want to do a variety of things from home.
And I think, Krista, that's so accurate. And Coloradans, even in a downturn, as we've seen this time and several years ago, that Coloradans stay in Colorado, even if they might lose that job, that 40-hour-a-week job. But through innovation, entrepreneurship, this is how we can incubate and grow small businesses and provide folks the opportunity to. Now, you know, my gosh, given all the opportunities with Facebook and online marketing, it is a different era, and this is just one little piece. I think that we are so enjoying. Colorado probably produces some of the finest foods in the world, and now we can find a way that even more people can access those locally produced foods and support those local farmers and local bakers and have new products that we can try in our communities.
One of my favorite things about your bill is that it allows for individuals to sell up to 250 dozen eggs a month. Now, my four hens could not produce that amount, and I'm only zoned for four hens. But if I lived in an unincorporated area, I think I would raise more, I would have more chickens and more eggs, because I think humanely produced eggs, which really can only be humanely produced on a small scale. I mean, even in a lot of these big farms, the animals are not well treated. But when you get eggs from someone who's local and small, you're getting eggs from chickens that are happy, that are healthy, that are running around and not cooped up in a pen.
And you know how delicious those eggs are.
They are better. They taste better.
We do have that actually in current law, that you can produce 250 dozen eggs and not be USDA inspected. But you have to buy them from the farmer on the farm. So what I did is I tried to take that premise of sales on the farm and actually take it to the farmer's market. But they have to refrigerate it, and now we have those ice chests and things like that to plug in the car. But they have to refrigerate the eggs as they're transporting them through this for the CSA or for the farmer's market. And that is the demand, and also the return that people get. They can charge a pretty nice price on those eggs when they're selling them at the farmer's market.
That's awesome. Well, you know, we've only got about another minute before we end this segment. I'd like to, how can folks support your bill and get the word out?
Well, I think that we hopefully will have this vote in the House, and a little bit of the debate has been around a cap, and I have in my bill, and that is something I've really sorted out with a lot of stakeholders, that people can earn up to $5,000 per year net income per product. And this is not a way to undermine Main Street. And so I think that that's a little different than with the bill that was introduced in the House. But I honestly feel that if a bakery is invested on Main Street, or folks have bothered to set up a business on Main Street, we don't want to undermine that. We just want to have this individual.
Just have this sweet bill. You know, we've only got two more seconds to go.
Okay.
So I want to say goodbye. But thank you so much for being on the show.
So grateful. Thank you.